Good day and welcome back to the Bloomfield Experience. My name is Jack and today we are going to be talking about paradoxes. But first, I've got a very special guest with me here today. Harrison, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
You're very welcome. So, would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself before we get started?
Of course. So, I'm a second year history and politics student. I have a particular interest in modern British political history, but I'm also interested in the Napoleonic era, some Roman history, quite a varied range of interests.
So that's very good, because today, as I said, we are going to be discussing paradoxes. So to give you a little bit of an idea of how this is going to work, me and Harrison each have a list of paradoxes, and we're going to take it in turns telling each other the name of a paradox. And then what the other person will have to do is try and guess what the paradox is about based on the name alone. And then the idea is that if we already know what the paradox is about, we'll A, say what we think it is about, and then also have another guess just off the name alone of what we think it could be about, hypothetically, if we were to see it for the first time based off the name alone. So, to get started, would you like to go first, Harrison, as you are the guest?
Oh, that's a lot of responsibility, Jack. I am honoured. Let's rock and roll. So the first one that I am going to make you guess, yep, is the Madman's Innocence Paradox.
Right, so I don't know this one. The Madman's Innocence, did you say?
Yes, so the Madman's Innocence.
So I reckon this is a paradox about...
Are you right about that, Jack?
Kind of the idea. So I reckon that this is a paradox about a guy who goes mad. So for instance, like, I know so he goes mad, right? So he's a bit insane, but then every now and then he'll regain his sanity, but he won't remember what he did when he was sort of a bit mad, right? So maybe if it's certain times of the week, certain times a day, he'll regain his sanity. And then he'll think he's innocent, so maybe he commits crimes when he's gone mad, and then he thinks he's innocent, but then because he doesn't remember it, it's almost like the tree falls in the forest, does anyone hear it? He doesn't remember him doing that because he was gone mad, and then it sort of goes round in a cycle, thus creating a paradox of he believes that he's done nothing wrong, but then overall he has, but he's just gone mad, and it's the different sort of mental states creating a paradox there.
I mean, that's a very interesting take on it, and in many respects, actually more interesting than the actual paradox, but you were very much on the right lines. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, go on then, tell me what it's about.
So the actual paradox is about, again, and you got this quite close, if a person is too insane to stand trial, obviously they are not guilty.
In court?
In court, yeah.
Yeah.
However, if they are later cured, then they'd become sane enough to stand trial for a crime they committed when they were insane. So should they, what this is getting at is, should they be held responsible now for something they were incapable of understanding at the time?
Oh, that's very interesting. That links into, like, ideas of autonomy and, you know,
yeah,
self-preservation. Oh, I like that.
And what's your sort of gut reaction to that proposition?
Ooh, I think that's hard, because if you were, like you say, unaware or not in a fit state to answer for what you've done, that's very, because you can't be tried, can you? If you're not in the right mental state, it's not A, fair, B, you're not going to really get anywhere in that trial, are you?
No.
But I also think that if you then, so the idea is that if you then become sane enough to stand trial, but I suppose that also hangs on, okay, do I remember what I did while I was in that poor mental state? But does it, like, that's really hard, because that's very case-by-case basis. Because if you remember what you've done when you felt sort of in that poor state, then I suppose you would stand trial, because you remember what you did. You know, it might be like levels of guilt, but I feel that would be almost special circumstance in the way that you weren't in the right mind and now you're better. Maybe we should just be thankful that that person is better, and then they're now going to go forth learning from what they've done and, you know, striving to be a better person. That's my positive outlook.
Yeah. I think I have a similar perspective. I tend to believe that everything should be based around one person's mindset when the alleged crime took place. So my reasoning would be, if this person was declared legally insane at the time that the alleged crime took place, I don't think if they were cured maybe 10 years down the line, it's fair to try them for something which they were already declared insane for.
But then
saying that, what if, let's say hypothetically, it's proven that maybe that person was being disingenuous, or maybe, because you do get cases where people try and take certain illnesses, so it is a difficult one.
Yeah, that is very complicated. As I said, I think it's very case-by-case basis on this matter, just by the very nature that there's so many other things. Because were they actually, like you say, were they actually insane, or were they just being disingenuous?
Yeah.
And all that sort of thing. Okay, I think that's a good one to start us off with. That's really got, you know, the sort of the brain ticking over.
Well, so I think, if I know that, those are the kind of paradoxes that I really like. The ones that really make you think about certain topics in the interesting way.
Yeah, because that links a lot more to sort of the judicial system and society as a whole. But to move on, I think I've got one here. I think this is a bit more of a simple one, and I think a bit more of a well-known one. Harrison, have you heard of the Ship of Theseus?
So I'm afraid I have.
So yeah.
So I may be able to have a go at, or slightly guess what this is about.
Would you like to give us your definition of the Ship of Theseus?
So I think my current understanding is that it revolves around a ship that's parts are taken away. Am I on the right line?
Yeah, you're on the right line.
And so if the premise is you've got a ship, and basically the ship is dismantled and replaced with new parts, is it still the same ship? Is that...
Yeah, I see you've pretty much got it there. Yeah, I see you got that. So I think the definition I've got is that it's pretty much the exact same thing. It's just the ship gets damaged in battle, and slowly but surely each piece gets replaced over a certain period of time. And then until all the pieces have been replaced, is that ship then still the same ship? And then the way I look at it is that that applies to all objects as well. Is it still the same object if pieces of it have been replaced? But so, yeah, you pretty much got that spot on, yeah.
Yeah, and again, I think this is a very fascinating paradox because it goes to the heart of identity.
And definitely, yeah.
If, let's say, you replace some hardware on a computer, Can it still be called the same function, same functional computer?
That's like a modern version. It's like, yeah, the computer of Theseus.
Yeah, you know, this is Theseus's sort of great grandchild or something. And
in the modern computer.
But what's your take? Do you think that objectivity and or not objectivity, but as it were, the state of being transcends objects, or do you think it changes and it's quite
fluid? I think that time changes everything. Every material thing will be changed by, you know, replacing it all by time. This is a whole other debate here that we might have in a later episode, but I think that the general idea revolves around the fact that if I'm the one who's owned the ship from the very beginning until all the pieces have been replaced, to me that is the same ship.
Right.
But if I had sold the ship to someone, they'd gone and replaced all the pieces, and then I'd bought it back, that would then, to me, be the different ship. So I suppose that brings into ideas of interpretation and the subjective nature in which objects are.
Yeah, because I think, as you were saying, it's very interesting to note how things change all the time, and maybe the sort of core elements might remain the same, but maybe in the tinkering around the edges, it's quite different.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think it is still a ship, isn't it?
I think, what ship is it? And
it's not the ship that I originally sold to the guy.
Yeah.
It's now his new ship that he's replaced all the pieces with.
So then, would you, near the Earth, we were doing a timeline.
Yeah.
Do we acknowledge the different phases that it's gone through, or do we, as it were, reset the clock every time it becomes fundamentally different?
I'd say it's more of a piece by piece process. It's not just one state of matter to the next, because then you're just buying a whole new ship. I'd say it's more over the, I think the core idea is that over a period of time, it has been replaced piece by piece. So then that creates almost checkpoints along this timeline that give this ship new meaning, because it's obviously then it if it's been damaged in battle, for example, that then means it's fought in war, it's, you know, maybe changed captaincy, changed crew, it's, you know, it's gone through hardship. So then that makes up the new ship, almost to give it its own history and personality, to want for a better phrase.
I'd completely agree.
So yeah, I think that's my take on the Theseus's ship.
No, and again, although it is a very well-known paradox, I think it's also a paradox that is quite accessible for a lot of people because
Yeah.
it doesn't require a background degree in philosophy just to understand the concepts.
And that's what I like about these sort of things, is that you can just sort of Google it and be like, oh yeah, I sort of get the idea of that.
Yeah, and that's what philosophy should be,
It
I
should be,
think.
yeah. But Harrison, would you like to give us your next paradox?
Yeah, of course. So I'm continue to going down the sort of legal
Yeah.
aspect of it because this is going to the court paradox or the paradox of the court.
The court paradox.
The
We've got
court.
on a very judicial theme here, haven't we?
We have. Now I am aware that this is a very broad topic, so I do feel a bit unfair and simply asking you to, you know,
All good.
trying to guess about the entire legal system, but good luck.
Right, the court paradox. I don't know this one at all. I'm going to go for a bit of a silly jab here. And as I've been reading about Greek myth recently, the first recorded court in Athens is still fresh in my mind. So I'm going
Were
to
you
go
there?
with. No, from reading.
This guy transcends time.
Apparently I
You're
do. I didn't realize it, but
actually Theseus.
apparently it was my ship. So the court paradox is the fact that there are three people who vote yes for, so in a trial, three people vote yes that this person should be punished for their crimes, and three people vote that they are innocent of their crimes. And the fact remains that this is just very, very simple, and there is no seventh vote. It's just there are three people voting and three people not, and they never reach a conclusion because they are all stuck in their ways.
So it's almost landlocked in the sense that there's no conclusion.
No, there's no conclusion. They just sit there debating forever.
Now that's actually quite interesting, and it's unfortunately not entirely on the right lines,
That's all right. I had a good guess.
but I think that's a very clever guess. Do you want to know what and you well you
Yeah.
were right about one thing about ancient Greece. I
Oh, is
think
it?
yeah, no, it comes from
Yeah.
this. So
It's just from what the stories I've been reading.
So, have you heard of Protagoras?
I think I've heard the name, but I don't know much.
So, he is apparently a famous teacher, and
Yeah.
he agrees to teach law to Aeschylus. Apologies if I'm getting the name wrong. And they make a deal. So, Aeschylus will only pay Protagoras after he wins his first court case.
Okay.
You with me so far?
Yep, I'm understanding.
However, Aeschylus, who seems to be a bit of a lazy person, he never takes a case. So Protagoras, he sues him, and he argues, if I win this case, the court forces you to pay me. If I lose, that means you won your first case, so by our agreement, you still have to pay me.
Oh.
Now, Aeschylus, he counters by saying, if I win this case, the court rules I don't have to pay you. If I lose, I still haven't won my first case,
So you don't have to pay him.
so I don't have to
So
pay.
they're stuck in a paradox
So
of court
yeah,
cases.
so it's very similar to yours, but essentially the paradox is getting at who is right and whose form of reasoning is correct.
Yeah. So I kind of think I was closer than I first thought I was there.
Yeah.
Because I kind of just sat there and was like, okay, I'm on the right lines in the fact that they're just going to be there forever debating.
In fairness, actually, I was quite dismissive of you. Not you personally, that you're...
My ideas of the court paradox.
Yeah, no, in fairness, I think essentially, sorry, Protagoras, that he has essentially dressed up your argument.
I think it might be a little bit the other way around, but yeah, that's all right. I won't take credit for an ancient Greek's works in law.
Yeah. But it's fascinating, isn't it? Because
it is.
The Greeks, they loved the sort of, obviously, the Socratic, I can never say it correctly.
We got there, though.
Yeah, that method of questioning and all of the dialogues, and they loved reasoning.
Yeah, and that's why I really like that sort of era of history and myths and all of that. Yeah, I think that's very fascinating that we can learn from.
Yeah, and as well, I think what's remarkable, a lot of it survives.
It does, and that is fascinating because these are thousands of years.
They are, and I think it's such a privilege that, that we're able to do, you know, such reason and logic. But that's I suppose that's slightly getting...
It's slightly off topic, but just to continue that a little bit, it's the fact that we know quite a lot about ancient Greek philosophy, for example.
Yes, yeah.
But then just to think how much more there must be, if we know this much already, how much has been lost to time?
Well, I read somewhere, I don't know how true this is, but I'm going to repeat it and hope for the best.
Yeah.
But I read that roughly 1% of the ancient... just the ancient literature, so not just Greece, but Roman, Egyptian, only 1% has survived.
Which is insane to think about.
Yeah, and how, wouldn't it be amazing if we could, I mean, it's quite a paradox in itself, I suppose, but if we could go back in time and preserve all of these texts.
Yeah, that would be, how much more would we know and how much more could we learn?
Yeah, I know. But anyway, I think speaking of learning, you should we move on to one of your paradoxes?
Yeah, I'll go for one of mine. We are going to go... We're going to go for a funny one.
That's
you know which one this is, don't you? We're going to go for Buridan's ass.
So, yes. Now,
I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, apologies. Buridan?
Buridan?
Buridan? Buridan. having a burden.
I'm probably getting that really wrong.
So... if you know how to pronounce it, do get in touch.
On Instagram, at the Bloomfield Experience.
Here we go. So, I think that... Now, this... Okay, full disclosure. All I know is that this is about a donkey.
Yeah. Now, you're right in that fact. Yeah, it's not about an actual ass, it's about a donkey.
No, no. So, and I don't know what the donkey has done or what it hasn't done. But I think, if I remember correctly, because I know that you and I had spoken about this before... And you said that it's a donkey that is it placed in between two stacks of hay?
In some versions, yeah.
So, and this is testing my mental...
This is testing memory I think.
So, okay, so it's in between nearly two identical pieces of hay. And I think the point is that it cannot make a rational choice in terms of which one to choose. And then is death involved? Or I'm gonna have to give way to you.
You're on the right lines. You're 100. Yeah. You pretty much got there.
Yeah.
I think you've pretty much got that 100% correct.
Mm.
So the donkey. It is a donkey.
Yeah.
It's the version that I've got. So when I was researching, I found that there were two different versions. There's one where it's two piles of hay, and there's one where it's a pail of water and a pile of hay.
Right.
The version I've got is the water and the hay, but both work for the purpose of the paradox.
Yeah.
And the idea that the donkey is equally hungry and thirsty and is placed precisely midway between a stack of hay and a pail of water.
Mm.
And now this paradox assumes that the donkey will always go to whichever is closer, but because he's precisely midway between two equal piles, or the pail and the pile of hay...
Yeah.
It cannot make the rational decision to decide which to go for and will either starve or die of thirst.
I mean...
It's quite a dark turn, but...
And it goes to the heart of what is more long-lasting. Should you go for the nourishment or the actual the water side of it, where you know you can get You know, you need water to live.
Yeah, but I suppose the point is that the donkey cannot make that rational decision between it. And despite it having quite a funny name,
yes,
I think it is quite a dark paradox overall.
Yes, it is. It reminds me of, I think, at the end of one of the In-Betweeners movies.
That's
movies,
a reference to make.
Yeah, they are stranded in a desert. And
oh no, I know what you're on about. No, I know what you're about.
The point I'm making is that they are there for 10 minutes, but it feels like for them hours.
Yeah.
So do you see where I'm going from?
I do.
Kind of,
yeah. It is quite fun. I do remember that we do talk about film on here occasionally at some points. But there you go. Thank you for that link. So yeah, that's Buridan's donkey or Buridan's ass, however you'd like to say it. And it's more or less about the rational decisions and general rationality that animals commit. And again, sort of levels of autonomy and can it make the decision without, I suppose, having the sort of fortitude to be able to pick between one or the other.
Yeah. I think, as you said, it is quite a dark one if you are to actually think about it and actually think, okay, if you were put into that position, what choice would you make? Because there's no easy option.
Well, if I was equally thirsty and hungry, I'd go for the water.
Would you?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose because you need water, and then potentially you could get the food later.
Yeah, because I could go for the water and then go back for the food, I suppose, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we can last longer with less food, but we need water more than we need food.
So my very, very rough knowledge on this is I think we can last maybe 3-4 days without water and potentially 14 days without food. That's my rough estimate. Although I'm waiting to be corrected.
3 days without water, according to Google.
Yeah.
And then without food, we can last, let's just kick me off, up to 3 weeks.
Up to 3 weeks? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So even more than the 14 days I...
Bear in mind, this is just the first answer I got from a random article on Google, so we don't know how scientifically correct it will be.
And I think it goes without saying that don't try this at home.
No, definitely do not try this at all. It will not end well, and it's not a nice thing to do.
No.
So, should we move on? Would you like to give us one of your paradoxes?
Yes. So this one...
I think you're 2 for 2 and I'm 0 for 2 here.
I think, in fairness, you, I'm hoping that you'll be able to get this, because this is more of a political one.
Okay.
And it's called the Dead Man's Vote Paradox.
I have no idea which one this is. Okay, I've never heard of this one.
Well, let's manifest it and let's try and think, because...
Dead Man's Vote. So... Yeah. Paradoxes still in that main topic. So I'm thinking it's got to be, my brain immediately goes to like elections, like prime minister presidential elections. Is it the, okay, right, this is my paradox idea. Someone who is on the voting list, let's say for the UK prime minister, has passed away. Now the government officials receive a vote in the name of that person via proxy, like proxy votes. You know when you can give permission for someone else to vote for you?
Yes.
Yeah. That they received a vote in their name. However, the person who proxy voted is unaware that this person has, let's say, just recently passed away. And they receive a vote from a dead person. And then okay, I'm kind of losing the thread of it. I had a really good initial idea. I know I'm sort of losing it a bit. But...
Well, if I were to tell you you're on the right lines...
Okay.
Then I'd maybe encourage you to keep on going.
And then the idea is that they go and investigate and they find that there's obviously this person has passed, but they still receive, and they continue to receive in future votes via proxy from this person. That's my random paradox, and they get stuck because they're receiving votes from a dead person, hence the dead man's vote.
You know, I think I'm more or less going to give it to you there.
Really?
I think so. But let's hear what I've got as a sort of actual explanation. So,
okay.
So a man casts a vote in an election, but he dies before the votes are counted.
Okay.
should his vote still count? Now that you might be thinking, well, of course it should, but let's hear it out. If it does, then it implies that the dead have political influence.
Mm.
If his vote isn't counted, it means that an action that was legally valid when performed loses validity retrospectively, which raises the question, what does a vote and when does a vote count?
Because it was legally binding when he was alive. Yeah. That's very interesting. So I think I had the general idea, but I wasn't on the right thing there.
But still, I think you're fairly close.
Yeah, my mind immediately went to voting by proxy.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, what's your initial reaction, Jack? Because if...
That's hard.
Because in America, of course, one of the claims that were made, which were, it should be said, found not to be the case, but one of the claims that the Republicans made in 2020 was that a lot of the dead people were voting for Joe Biden.
Mm.
Now, it transpired that there was a few instances where people had died before November 5th and their votes were still counted. But in terms of the massive sort of not alive people, that wasn't the case. But it does raise quite interesting questions.
It does, and I think that it's very hard to give a straight answer to, because so my initial reaction is yes, their votes, the dead person's votes still matters, because when they were alive it still counts as this person was alive, this was a legally binding vote, everything was fine, and they just happened to pass. Because, you know, God forbid, say I cast a vote and then pass before it's counted, even if we're talking about not dying of old age, I definitely think that I would still want my vote to be counted, if that makes sense. Like, if I was in their shoes, if I was in that position, I would want my vote to still be counted.
Yeah, that seems perfectly reasonable. And I think as well, you've got to understand that the dead do impact our policies, or maybe the expectation of death, because obviously we plan for pensioners, we plan for retirement,
we plan for wills and funerals all those sorts of actions. And we do plan for every eventuality.
Yeah, and your point about wills is very pertinent, because we, as long as a person signs a will, then that's a
legally bound influence from the dead. So I think the dead have more influence on us than we first realised.
Yeah, which is why these kind of thought experiments can seem very mind-boggling at first. If you think about it, then yeah, you're exactly right. A will is, as you said, quite legally binding. And actually, as a brief aside, I found out that as long as you sign your name, it doesn't have to be in a big fancy document.
Does it not? No, it can just be anywhere.
I could sign on the walls in the studio everything to Jack, and as long as I signed it with my signature, then that would be legally binding.
Wow, that's interesting. So let's not go around signing walls. Don't go around signing your will and walls. Just have to preface that. But I do think that is a very interesting paradox, and one that I think is very good to dissect there and break down. But if you're ready, I've got one if you'd like to.
Absolutely. That's fine.
I'm going to go. This is one that I didn't know before I researched it. Mm. The bootstrap paradox.
Yeah, so I don't know this one, but I am...
Let's hear you.
I'm going to guess something about distance.
In a sense, okay, yeah, in a sense.
And maybe something about the... Well, okay, I'm going to try and go for a slightly more funny one, because I feel like...
Because we've had a lot of talk about passing.
Yeah, no, I feel like my paradoxes have kind of brought the mood down a bit.
Well, I did have Burden's donkey.
Yeah, so I'm going to go... This paradox revolves around a person who is travelling around the world.
Yeah.
And they are running into difficulty because they are not equipped to handle all of the different terrain that the Earth has. So they need sandals for the desert.
Yeah.
But they don't have Wellington boots for mountains. I mean, I think you want more than Wellington boots if you go off a mountain.
For swampy areas.
Yeah, for swampy areas.
I get the idea of what you're trying to say. Yeah,
but I'm fully aware that that's very much not what the bootstrap is.
It's not. And I don't know how that would turn into a paradox. I think that's just adventuring troubles, but...
I know.
I appreciate the effort.
Perhaps a paradox would be that he can only has a bootstrap. So he doesn't...
Okay. So he can't. He's trying to use a bootstrap for everything on his adventure.
Yeah, but he can't because the Earth just says no.
Okay, that's... I like the attempt there. I appreciate that. So
points for creativity.
Points for creativity, 100%. So the bootstrap paradox is where an object or piece of information is sent back in time, where it is then used or relied upon to create the same object or information that was sent back in the first place.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it's a bit of time loop here.
Yeah.
This creates this time loop with no obvious or discernible beginning or end. And then this also creates the question of where did this object or piece of information originate from?
Mm.
So, for instance, let's say I send my phone back in time.
Yeah.
For when then I'm using my phone to research the bootstrap paradox.
Yeah.
And then I then have my phone back here now, but where did that information originate from? Because I'm now talking... I've just created a double paradox there.
Yeah. It's almost like a Doctor Who tiny, whiny, wibbly, wobbly, or whatever it needs.
Whatever that is.
We need the sort of the 10th Doctor, to come in here with his TARDIS.
Yeah, well... That's the idea of the bootstrap paradox. Points of creativity, but it discerns... You were going about space, but I think it was more time-related. So, the general idea, I appreciate.
Yeah. So I think that the one of the reasons why it's so fascinating is that I think one of the assumptions is that time has no beginning or end.
Yeah.
And so if, let's say, your phone... It's almost like you can't date it to 2015 or 2025. It's in a constant loop motion.
Yeah.
And so then therefore time is almost bent and not very sort of static.
It becomes non-linear.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other debate that we could have about time.
Yes.
But Harrison, would you like to give us one more?
Okay then, let's go. So I believe that I have two more on my list.
Yeah. Would you like to give us your favourite?
Oh, okay, then. Let's see. Okay. So this one, again, I should declare that I didn't know this before researching, but it is the immortal prisoner paradox.
Okay. I think I have an idea about what this one might be.
Well, come on,
I'm not sure if I'm getting this confused with a different paradox, but I think I have an idea. Is the immortal prisoner paradox the one where a person is sentenced to death? There's a lot of death paradoxes, aren't there? Crikey.
I know, these philosophers, they don't know what to do with themselves.
Mad, isn't it? But the idea is that the immortal prisoner gets... So this prisoner gets sentenced to death, but he can't be killed on a weekend, and I have a vague idea about this. So he can't be killed on a weekend, but he has to be killed when it's a surprise. And I think it's like, okay, so he goes on a Friday and he's like, oh, but tomorrow's the weekend, so it then doesn't become a surprise, and then so I can't be killed on the Friday, and then he goes on Thursday, and then it's like, oh, okay, it has to be a surprise, but if I'm going to die tomorrow, then it's not a surprise, so I can't be killed on a Thursday. And then it repeats all the way through the week until he's like, oh, I can't actually be killed because by this logic, I cannot die on any of these days while still being surprised. And then isn't it that the prisoner just dies on a Wednesday or something?
Well, I think in all instances, the prisoner dies. He doesn't avoid that fate. Yeah. But unfortunately, that isn't the paradox.
Is it not?
No, it's...
Was I thinking of a different one?
You were thinking of, I think, the Hanging one or some kind of There's a famous thruso which I the name escapes me, but it is one of the most famous because it's like, if how can it be a surprise if I work out which day of the week it is? But unfortunately, this isn't.
No, I'm surprised.
No, so do you want to know what it is?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay, so it all revolves around Judge, and he orders a man to life in prison for his crimes. But the whilst the prisoner is behind bars, he
Sorry, sorry to interrupt you. I was talking about the unexpected hanging paradox.
there we go. That's the one. So when inside the jail, the prisoner undergoes a medical procedure that halts aging, and in this one gets points for outlandishness, and so it makes the prisoner immortal. So the idea is, should the prisoner be released near the end of his natural human lifespan, or should he be sentenced to prison essentially indefinitely?
So he's been given a life sentence.
Yeah, but then he becomes immortal during prison time. So should he remain locked up forever, or should he be released near the end of the average human lifespan?
Okay, so I think isn't in the UK, I believe a life sentence is an actual set number of years.
I think it's 25.
So I suppose that sort of solves that paradox, really.
But then the sometimes you can get like whole like indefinite life sentences without the possibility of parole.
Okay.
So the
We're
idea,
assuming it's one of those.
yeah, assuming it's one of those, and assuming that this one person becomes immortal, at no one else is able to. It's just him. So what do they do? Do they keep him locked up forever? Because when he was sentenced, he was expecting to die in prison. But if he becomes immortal,
Right.
then he
This
can't
is
die.
very science fiction-y. I think this would make for a good sort of like show on Netflix or something, but
Yeah. But it's quite an interesting
that's
one to
hard.
consider, isn't it?
There's no real answer to that, is there?
No. Well, I don't need to give you
Yeah,
my take.
let's hear your opinion.
So my take would be that I think that he, and assuming it's a he, it could
The
be a she,
prisoner.
yeah. I'm assuming that they, I think, should remain in prison indefinitely. If they have received a life sentence, then it's probably not going to be from stealing a Mars bar from the court. So
No.
I think that on that sense, the immortality doesn't negate the crimes that they committed earlier in their life.
Also, I kind of think that immortality in itself is enough of a punishment.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about this is a whole other debate we could have that we don't really have time for, but I definitely think that immortality is in itself a punishment because I personally would never want to live forever.
Yeah.
You get to, you just to the end of time, the end of the universe,
Yeah.
But I in the in going a bit more down to earth as well as down to earth as we can be in this paradox, I definitely think that they should live out so their life sentence has no indefinite end. They should remain in prison until either they have like they get told that they release, they can get parole or anything like that. But I definitely agree with you that they should remain for their sentence.
Yeah, of course. Well, those have been interesting, haven't they,
They have,
Jack?
they really have been. These have been some very sort of from convoluted to slightly weird, I think is the right way to put it.
Yes.
But I'd like to, I think it'd be probably a good time to wrap it up there. I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show, Harrison, and giving us some of your insight.
Thank you for having me, Jack.
You're very welcome. And I would like to thank you all very much for listening on this episode about paradoxes. Please remember to follow us on Instagram at the Bloomfield Experience, and I hope to see you all in the next episode. So goodbye for now.